Well, thank you, Dan. As of right now, I only see one question typed into the chat box. We'll get to that, but please keep typing in questions. We have time. We'll also open up the phone lines momentarily. But we'll start off the first question. It's actually, Paul, for you. I would like to hear Paul's perspective regarding winter closures for I-80 in Wyoming, as an example. How does or could the DOT help during winter closures?
Jennifer, thank you. That's a good question. From a state DOT perspective, I think the long-term handling of winter closures is something that's going to fall into the area of that's a predictable disaster that it's likely to happen every year. So the ability to do some anticipation that I talked about is an element of that. But it's also something where a state DOT can take advantage of some planning to be able to deal with the inevitable of winter storms on a corridor. And the model to do that is to follow best practices that exist in other state DOTs, but also that the more sophisticated carriers are able to conduct. And what Dan's just gone through from UPS, perhaps that's quite a high bar that he's setting in terms of standards for carriers. You know, clearly a single independent owner-operator in the trucking industry is not going to be able to invest or to have anything that matches even approaching, even thinking about what UPS is able to do to maintain in the network. And that's where actually the state DOT becomes more important for those users of the network in the freight system that don't have the sophistication or the capabilities that, say, a big carrier like UPS has. Communications is obviously the key then to those sorts of users, and that includes not only in what you can do in leading up into advance of something that can be known as likely to happen, but also critically during the restoration of the network to operations, and that includes right through the very end to make sure that everybody knows when things are being close to being restored to normal operations and how that's going in terms of the recovery period, using all available media and technology to do that. And I'm sure you know you already do some of that today. It's trying to look back and look at it particularly through the lens of the freight industry and the freight community, where you know, individual operators may not be located in the metropolitan areas, and where you're reaching local general media, you may need to reach out through the internet and through other networks to be able to do a better job of that. But also importantly, and part of best practices, is looking back for lessons learned after events. So that's a classic part of industry and planning to deal with disaster impacts. It's the best practices of how can you do better next time? How can you better set priorities, for example, for how you deployed resources that were available? And a continual reassessment of the network itself to see how it's being used, where it serves overhead functions as well as the local communities, and where the importance of the network is over time, and also at various times during the year. That seasonality factor does matter in terms of, you know, which resource priority should be set at what period of time based on how the network is being used at different times of the year. So I think that's a quick overview, and I don't have a good guidebook to point you to immediately to say here's how to do this as a cookbook, but there's many elements where you can definitely learn from best practices such as Dan has just run through.
Well, thank you. And Dan, I'll actually put it out to you as well. You know, do you have any thoughts on what state DOTs or state agencies could do to help UPS, you know, with their contingency plans?
Well, my first thought when the question was posed was, and we've done this in other states. I can't speak directly to Wyoming, but if we've sat on, EB and UPS have sat in on state panels to talk about those things. Certainly I-80 corridor, most people know, is prone to snow all across the corridor. But we have sat in for example, Pennsylvania, and talked to, not the DOT,
Thank you. Dan, the next question is for you. Do you find the operational costs of disruption match the example provided by Paul, who ran a trial with East Coast ports? I'd also like to hear you talk about how you incorporate environmental regulations into your planning for disasters.
Sorry, Jennifer, was that question for me?
Dan, that's for you, yes.
Well, the scenario that Paul talked about with the West Coast ports, interesting enough, if you recall, a couple of years ago, there were some disruption at the West Coast ports, and the disruption to UPS from an economic standpoint was fairly good. Well, bad in this case, it was high. But more importantly, from a service perspective, it hurt us very much. Typically, the stuff that comes into the port, in our case, most of it goes on a train, and we were having trouble getting the volume through the port to the trains, and we were having service disruptions. I know as an organization, we worked diligently with some of the folks in the state to see how we could relieve, and in fact, we talked to folks in D.C. to see how we could help relieve that, if we could help relieve. But when those type of things occur, it's extremely difficult to overcome, and the cost certainly ripples for quite a long time, because it takes a while for UPS, in this case, to catch up in terms of service. Even after the port opened up, the ports opened up and it was flowing freely again, we still had major service disruptions. And I'm sorry, Jennifer, I didn't catch the second part.
Let me go back up to that one. Can you talk about how you incorporate environmental regulations into your planning for disasters?
As I mentioned in our mission statement, our focus is not only on money, but it's also on people and our communities. We want to be, and I believe personally that we are, good community neighbors. You may have seen in the opening slide that we have many modes of alternate fuels in our vehicles that are out there. So UPS is, we consider ourselves a very environmentally friendly company, and we continue to work hard going forward with that.
Okay, thank you. The next question is, given that disasters cause communication disruptions, what alternate means of communications do you intend to employ in short and long-term disruptions? Dan, I'm guessing that's meant for you.
I'm sorry, Jennifer, I couldn't hear you there.
Given that disasters cause communication disruptions, what alternate means of communications do you intend to employ in short and long-term disruptions?
Great question. During 9/11, fortunately, we had a severe problem with communication. Towers were down, obviously, and lines were backed up. Our communication department and our security function handle that as far as part of our contingency planning. They do have alternate means of communication. Many of them are very expensive, and most of it is rent type of equipment to do this. I don't know the specifics. Certainly, if the person who's asking the question would want, I can get the answer for them and drop them an email, or Jennifer through you or the group, get an answer back to that.
Okay, yeah, if you want to, if you are able to get an answer and can let me know, I can definitely get that out when I send the follow-up information.
I'll do that.
Okay.
I can add a little bit to that.
Oh, please go ahead.
From the perspective of the technologies employed, I think it's no more than just don't have a single point of failure where you're depending upon a website, for example, to be the sole point of information. That if for some reason internet access is cut off, use all the available media. And that includes the old tech media of things like broadcast radio. If you think of individual truck drivers, they may have still legacy broadcast radios, as well as perhaps the satellite radio network, where there's a trucking channel that does provide some traffic reports that is ongoing today. So just the point is, plan for and have in the contingency planning to use all available media, not assume that only, say, a high-tech website is going to be sufficient in case of a disaster.
Jennifer, one of the things that the folks that control this for us is the satellite radio. We would use that
Dan, again, I think this next question is for you, but Paul, feel free to jump in as well. Has there been a problem in restoring public roads needed by the freight industry, but maybe not the general public? How have you or other freight carriers communicated your recovery needs to local and state transportation officials? What about communications from local and state officials about the status of closed roads? How have you and other freight carriers communicated your recovery needs to local and state transportation officials, and what about communications about the status of closed roads? Okay, Paul, anything that you wanted to add?
I think the communications, I think as Dan just referenced, it's got to be a little bit more proactive on the public side, but also measured. I mean, and part of that's communications to the general public, not just to the freight community, though, you know, making sure that you review the communications such that they're also relevant to the freight community that may not be local, I think is the only other perspective I'd add to it, that communications are more useful to the freight community if they're also something that, say, a driver who's not domiciled or operating locally would also be able to kind of know what it means for him.
Okay. The next question is for Dan. I'd like to hear your perspective on balancing the competitive edge with contingency planning. How do you collaborate with other companies and share equipment and resources?
When it comes to contingency planning, we're not selfish. Our competition, we have in fact shared equipment. That's typically more at an airport or a gateway type of facility where we'll share equipment, and that's just in support of the aircraft themselves. For example, tugs, dollies,
Thank you. The next question is to both of you. How can state or regional government best address, plan for, and mitigate the effects of potential disaster interruptions, such as the West Coast ports example that Paul presented, using existing plans, such as state transportation plans, state rail plans, and goods movement plans? Can you suggest good informative sources for best management practices at the state level? Paul, I'll put it out to you first.
Those are good questions. I think that some of the planning has to start from the contingency planning that already exists to deal with the security and safety issues within a state or a metro area. And it's a broader context of than just what is the freight network impact. It's that what is the transportation system ability to deal with disruptions, interruptions from a safety security perspective. And I know after 9/11 there were a lot of planning efforts that were initiated or expanded substantially at the state DOT level. There's been work at AASHTO. There's an entire standing committee within TRB that's been encouraging research and the sharing of best practices in that area. And the freight contingency planning following on from consequences of a disaster falls as a subset, I would say, of that sort of research and planning. As far as it being incorporated and included in say, a goods movement plan or a statewide rail plan or some other transportation planning activity which requires or at least should include a scope to look to the freight network, it's very important to do the stakeholder outreach to include an understanding through your own staff or your consultants to have an appreciation for the needs and the requirements of the freight system. In terms of access and in terms of throughput capacity that I've mentioned earlier. And then it really becomes a decision on the part of the planners in terms of priority setting. You know, there's going to be limited resources, so the ability to add extra capacity in the event of some sort of disaster may be limited, and yet there may be some low-cost options sometimes in a planning context where an investment may be made in terms of timing or a decision in terms of capacity that could help alleviate a bottleneck situation, especially in the recovery period from a disaster. And then some of that already exists in terms of planning for emergencies. I know that states for years have had evacuation route planning and some other contexts where, you know, that's to move people, but sometimes there's a freight element that can be relevant in terms of how you look at how you serve the economy and get your area or your state back up and functioning following a disruption. But the guidance as far as best practices and the ongoing research in this area, since this isn't a static area, I would look to the traditional sources of both TRB and AASHTO for that.
Okay, and Dan, any thoughts?
Well, I would have to defer to, you know, what agencies to include to Paul's expertise on that. I would just add that there are companies, you know, other than just UPS, that are good at this contingency type of planning and process. And I would encourage local and or state governments to reach out for these companies and just ask them to, you know, help them assess where they stand in terms of their planning process. My wife has actually worked for both a local and a state government, and I've seen some of the activities that she was involved with in regards to contingency planning. So it seems silly to plan ahead, but boy, if the event ever occurs, you're going to be so much further ahead had you done that.
Okay. The next question is for both of you as well. Have you considered climate change scenarios or predictions that suggest there will be an increase in intensity and frequency of storms in the coming years? Paul or Dan, if you want to jump in on any thoughts.
This is Paul. I think, we have not done any specific modeling of this, so there's been a lot of discussion around this topic within the last few years, obviously going back to Katrina and even before. I think really what is relevant is that this idea that we've seen even in our recent global recession, that you can have what by historical measures are extraordinary events that affect your operations and your organization that need to be taken into account in terms of your planning, that a small variance or standard deviation around some norm and whatever the context of planning is may not be adequate in terms of properly planning for your organization. Clearly, that's evidenced in what Dan has discussed that UPS does, and he's absolutely right that this is really now standard operating practice, really from risk mitigation to risk management on the parts of large companies across the transportation sector, and that should be reflected back in operations planning within the public sector at a metro or at a state and a federal level. There's a lot of planning ongoing that exists outside of DOT in the federal government, and we see this in large organizations of all kinds already. The challenge for the economy is to spread it down further into smaller and smaller organizations where it's more difficult to allocate and to dedicate resources specifically to planning for these sorts of problems.
Jennifer, this is Dan. We have not planned specific to climate change, but certainly our plans include some of the things that that climate change, at least what the experts say, climate change would give us more storms, more hurricanes, those type of things. So our contingency plans, we feel very comfortable that our contingency plans are prepared for all of those likelihoods. But I don't know that we've done anything in regards specific to climate change.
Okay, thank you. Well, I don't see anything else typed in, so I will actually have the operator give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone. But in the meantime, the attendees, if you think of anything else and want to type it in as well, please feel free to. But if the operator could give the instructions. And we'll just wait a minute to see if any questions come in. Do we have any questions?
I'm showing no questions.
Okay. Well, if there are no more questions, we'll go ahead and end a little early. Thank you, Dan and Paul. Really appreciate your presentations. I think we had some good questions and good dialogue going here. Thank you also for everybody in attendance. The recorded version of today's webinar will be available within the next few weeks online, and I'll send out an email once it becomes available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for attending today, please make sure you are signed in today with your first and last name, or type your name into the chat box if you didn't, or if you're attending with a group of people. Please also download the evaluation form and email it to me afterwards. And as well, if you aren't applying for the AICP credits, if you still want to download the evaluation form and send it to me as well, that'd be great. We're always looking for feedback. I am just putting a poll up on the screen right now, just trying to get a better count of how many people were in attendance. If there were others in the room with you, if you could just indicate that in the poll, not including yourself. So if it's just yourself, you don't need to respond on the poll. The next seminar will be held on August 18th and will be about freight performance measures. And if you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website and sign up for the seminar. The address, I'll bring the address back up in a minute on your screen. And I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv. So with that, we'll close out for today. Thank you very much, Dan and Paul. And thank you to everybody in attendance, and have a great rest of the day.